frustrating to see that the real plight of these children is being used to justify more border security that further criminalizes these flows, more aid for their countries that goes to these corrupt police forces or to play on flight. USAID building youth outreach centers and this kind of things, but there's no proven evidence whatsoever that they work. And on the other hand, the kind of policies that caused it, the militarization, support for militarization under the drug war, and the free trade agreements like NAFTA and CAFTA that displaced so many small farmers and workers aren't even being mentioned as culprits in the whole debate, and there's no mention whatsoever of taking a look at how those policies that were basically imposed in large part from the United States have contributed to this crisis.
I'd like to thank you very much. We've been speaking with Laura Carlson of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information about FAIR, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. With me is Peter Hart. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
The time is 6:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Bread and Roses. Human rights activist Dayanara Marte talks about bold rebirth from trauma, oppression, and violence.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor and broadcast live from the 2014 Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival. The 27th annual festival will take place July 3rd through the 6th, 2014, at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. It will feature Greg Allman, Los Lobos, Lee Fields, and The Expressions among the 100-plus acts that will perform over the four-day festival. The 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival will benefit the Oregon Food Bank. More information on artists, tickets, and the KBOO broadcast of the festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is looking for an IT contractor to work with our organization 15 hours a week at $25 an hour, providing on-site IT support as well as website maintenance support. Essential qualifications include at least 5 years of general IT network and server maintenance and website administration, experience with PHP, MySQL, experience in Drupal 6 and 7, ability to maintain rack-mounted server and maintain a local area network of Windows XP, 7, and 8 workstations. Send a resume and cover letter addressing the above qualifications and the question, why KBOO is important, to hiring@kboo.org or drop it off for IT hiring team at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm/hiring.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from B Space Movement, an expressive art studio, hosting the Life, Art, Being Integrated Arts Festival, a week of practicing presence with the self, the body, and earth, July 7th through 12th. At B Space and Portland Shambhala Center. Life, Art, Being includes authentic movement, Shambhala art, deep ecology practices, and more. Information at b-space.org/life-art-being.
Touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm Leanne Kranz. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday night at 6 here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. We are always open to new members, no experience necessary. So, if you'd like to host, produce, or engineer with us, please contact Ani Haynes, KBOO's volunteer manager, at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web at www.kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. There you can listen to past shows, share comments or show ideas. And you can also like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses. Tonight, we play a conversation that Bread and Roses host Delphine Crescenzo had with Dayanara Marte, a healer, organizer, and human rights activist, about her concept of bold rebirth. They talk about trauma, personal and historical, internalized oppression and violence, and the impact these have on the women of the world. Dayanara shares her, quote, journey of self-healing, forgiving, letting go, and finding purpose, end quote. She is the founder of In Bold Rebirth Consulting and will soon release a book of the same name. Dayanara Marte is a first-generation Latina Dominican immigrant from Washington Heights, the mother of two, and dedicated to social justice and humanity. She has a master's in public health from Columbia University and over 15 years of experience working with women, girls, and the LGBTQ community on reproductive health, mental health, and violence prevention. She is nationally known for her work as a trauma prevention specialist, an internalized oppression healer, and trainer and facilitator in emotional release, organizing healing circles of self-healing from the impact that oppression, trauma, violence, and poverty has on our mind, body, and spirit. To read Dayanara Marte's work, you can go to www.inboldrebirth.wordpress.com. In the first part of their conversation, Delphine Crescenzo asked Dayanara about the origins of her concept of In Bold Rebirth.
First of all, Dee, I wanted to welcome you to Bread and Roses.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I'm very excited to talk about your project, In Bold Rebirth. And so you founded a consulting company called In Bold Rebirth a few years ago, and then you're currently working on the book that's of the same name. I was wondering if you can talk about the concept, In Bold Rebirth.
Sure. That concept was really all about me. It had nothing to do with the work that I do now. But it was about me stepping down as an executive director of a nonprofit organization that I was in from 1998 till about 2012, mm-hmm. and really going through this identity crisis. I had been there for about 15 years and just didn't know what else was next for me. Mm. And in this organization, it was the best organization that you can possibly work with. And also there was a lot of internalized oppression that was happening amongst the sisters that were creating a different world around healing and alternative justice, mm-hmm. but also were finding it difficult to work in the organization because a lot of internalized oppression was getting played out. And so I kind of felt really alone. After being here for 15 years, my children had went off to college, mm-hmm. and my whole identity was that I was D from CASA. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, well, what does this mean? So I got coaching from a couple of people, mm-hmm. and one coach particularly asked me, you know, well, what would you be doing if you weren't working in this organization? And I couldn't answer for about like 20 minutes. And finally, I was like, well, I would be creating this organization everywhere that I would go. And what that looked like was I would be creating healing spaces everywhere I would go. Mm. And so I embarked on my own journey of my own bold rebirth of looking at how I led this organization from a place of my own internalized oppression from being abandoned when I was a little kid, and having to really go back into my past and heal some wounds that were getting played out as I led an organization and a movement around reproductive justice. And so that was how this name came out. And I realized that that's what I was going to go out and do in the world, is help women on the front lines, leaders of movements, of organizations, teachers, social workers, just all the women who were doing the work, be on their own journey of bold rebirth as they heal from trauma and lead from a place of power.
And why is it that you think that this needs to exist for women? You know, what motivated you to really share your knowledge with other women?
Well, I worked at Casa Atabecache, which is a nonprofit in the South Bronx, translated into the House of Women's Power. Mm-hmm. And it was an organization meaning exactly what I just said, which is a group of Puerto Rican women got together one day. They were working in social justice organizations that said that they were providing a service for community, but they themselves internally within the organization really didn't feel like they had a voice. We're dealing with racism, with sexism, with patriarchy. And they created this amazing healing organization for women of color particularly, but everybody in generally. And so for the past 15 years, I worked in this organization providing services for young and adult women to heal from violence, mind, body, and spirit. But more importantly, to contextualize their personal story in a historical context of violence against women all over the world. Hmm. And so I just continue to do that work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I want to talk about oppression, and I want to talk about, this culture of violence that you were just mentioning. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you about the self-healing, you know, the forgiving, the letting go, and also the finding purpose. These are your words.
Those are my words?
These are your words. I grabbed them from something you said. So tell us about that, the importance of that, of first, you know, introspection and looking in and forgiving yourself and, you know, letting go so that you can find this bigger purpose.
Yeah, I think that all of us are really great at knowing our stories, right? We're not walking around not aware that we have a history, that we have a past, that we, you know, have a mother, a father, whether they're present or not, right? That we were birthed into this world somewhere, somehow. Mm-hmm. And some of us are really great at even sharing that story without any particular feeling. But the liberation of women all over the world is really based on our ability to define what is actually happening and to feel that. Because one of the things that our body does very well is that, one, it protects us from harm without the agreement of the mind, and two, it holds violence and it holds trauma, and it will manifest as disease in our bodies if we don't have safe spaces to release some of our stories that are traumatic and violent. And so for me, my journey, I have been telling my story for a really long time, especially because I worked with young women. And so I modeled to them what it looked like to really share your story. But I think it wasn't, and I did a lot of emotional release work. We did healing circles in this organization once a month for 10 years. I did emotional release. And so I got a chance to really work on a lot of different parts of my past that were no longer serving a purpose in my life. But I think it wasn't until 2010, 2011 that I put myself in this program and started really to understand that I had been creating my life, that out of all those things that were happening, what was important was that I had decided somewhere along the road that I wasn't good enough, that people were not going to love me, that no matter what I did, people were going to leave, that I was always going to be on my own, that I didn't belong anywhere. And I had not yet defined those things for myself. Mm-hmm. And so the journey of healing and recovery and forgiveness wasn't about me going to forgive an actual person. It was about me really forgiving myself for making those agreements with myself that then shaped everything that I did. It shaped how I showed up as a mother. It shaped how I led a whole organization. It shaped how I created friendships and relationships. I mean, it really just became my identity. Wow. And so it wasn't until then that I think purposely and intentionally my journey of deep forgiveness of myself happened.
Hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you also for pointing out the piece of you had made that decision at one point, right? I think sometimes, you know, we're not always aware of all the decisions that we make. And it's, you know, about accepting decisions that we made in the past and forgiving ourselves for making those decisions. It's so important.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So let's shift gear just a tiny bit and really talk about, you know, so there's the personal decisions that we make, but there's also all of the environment where we come from, right? There's the impact of oppression, trauma, violence, poverty, and how does these things affect the mind, the body, the soul of women, but more specifically of women of color.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have this saying that, you know, every little girl, you know, is born into this life with a dream. Mm. And then something happens. And every little girl grows up. And then every little girl has a story to tell. And depending on where she's at in the world and what she has seen, what she's experienced, what she has survived will be who she becomes. And, you know, violence is a big, big thing that I think for many years we've come a long way from, you know, not even realizing its impact to defining, people as victims to now saying that people are survivors and really continuing to, you know, create and define for people this huge impact. And what I'm getting now from the work that I'm doing is that for 100 people who experience the same thing, 100 people will have 100 different stories. Mm. And so you can't create one model that kind of fits all.
Yeah.
But violence is so deep that what it does is that it takes a situation and it creates it as this automatic reoccurring dialogue where we take an experience from the past. And when we hear something or feel something, anything close to what that was, from our ideas, our memories, our opinions, our images, then we will communicate with the world from that place. And sometimes we don't even know that that's happening, and how that shows up is saying, well, that's just who I am. That's just how, you know, I just don't do that. I just don't, I don't go through there. Well, when you do that, I don't like that. And not really understanding where does that come from.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that violence does is that it shapes our identity, and it shapes what we think we deserve and what we think we're worth, what we request of others, our attachments, our expectations, how we relate to the world and ourselves, and it shapes our opinions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then trauma also doesn't just show up in our physical body, but it also shows up in language. And what it does is that it creates a world where we are constantly trying to fix, survive, or change ourselves or others.
Yeah.
Instead of creating the world that we want to live in.
Mm. Yeah. We do that.
Yeah,
we do that a lot. And part of it, so it's really this internalized oppression, right? Can you talk about this? What is internalized oppression and how does it show up? What are the consequences on the lives of women and women of color?
Yes. So internalized oppression in its real simplest form is when a victim of any type of injustice, but primarily in the conversation, I think we can see it more clearly, is in the conversation of domestic violence or sexual assault, is when a victim feels that the violence that she or he is experiencing is a result of something that they did, that they deserve it, and that they can also change the behavior of the perpetrator if they just change themselves.
Yeah.
And it is a constant cycle of fixing, changing, and surviving yourself. And so what you do is that you no longer, even when you are no longer in that situation of violence, you already have internalized the message that the perpetrator has said to you. You either think that you deserve what was done to you, you don't think that you're good enough and that's why it happened, that nobody's going to love you that way, or that this is the way that love looks like. And so you really start, whatever that message is, or the reason or the logic as to why you were being abused or why something is happening to you, you actually just start believing it yourself, to the point where you no longer need that injustice, that oppression, that poverty, that neglect, that that behavior to happen from someone else. You will automatically do it to yourself.
It's been a while. I'm not who I was before. You look surprised. Your words don't burn me anymore. Been meaning to tell ya, but I guess it's clear to see. Don't be mad, it's just a brand new kind of me. Can't be bad, I found a brand new kind of free. Careful with your ego, he's the one that we should blame. Had to grab my heart back, God knows something had to change. Just a brand new kind of me. It took a long, long time to get here. It took a brave, brave girl to try. It took one too many excuses, one too many lies. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. If I talk a little louder, if I speak up when you're wrong, if I walk a little taller, I've been under you too long. If you notice that I'm different, don't take it personally. Don't be mad, it's just a brand new kind of me. And it ain't bad, I found a brand new kind of free. Oh, it took a long, long road to get here. It took a brave, brave girl to try. I've taken one too many excuses, one too many lies. Don't be surprised. Oh, said you look surprised. Hey, if you were a friend, you wanna get to know me again. If you were with the wild, you'd be happy to see me smile. Not expecting sorry, I'm too busy finding myself. I got this, I found me, found me, yeah. I don't need your opinion, I'm not waiting for your okay. I'll never be perfect,
But at least now I'm brave. And now my heart is open. I can finally breathe. Don't be mad. It's just a brand new kind of free. That ain't bad. I found a brand new kind of me. Don't be mad. It's a brand new time for me.
That was Alicia Keys' A Brand New Me. You are listening to Bread and Roses. This evening, we share an interview with Bread and Roses member Delphine Crenzo, conducted with Dayanara Marte, healer, organizer, and human rights activist, about her bold rebirth. Before the break, they talked about internalized depression and violence and the impact these have on the women of the world. Delphine asks Dayanara to define historical trauma and describe its added impact.
And there's another piece to this, which is very important for understanding the history of people of African descent here in the United States, but also Native Americans and other groups that have been historically discriminated against. And so that's the concept of historical trauma. Other people call it intergenerational trauma. Can you define what that is and how that works into this picture?
Yes, I think it's very important for women of color, for people of color in general. When we talk about violence, when we talk about trauma, it's very important to contextualize people's personal story in a historical context of their people, of their land, of their country, because those messages of our country being colonized or the genocide that is still happening in all of our countries, even in the United States of America, you know, all those messages of why that happens and why is that is continuing to happen are also messages that we internalize and then play out on each other, right? Mm-hmm. So we show up, you know, discriminating, stereotyping. We also, you know, have the same mentality of who belongs, who doesn't belong. We punish each other. We punish ourselves. And so it's very important, and this is a conversation I think that the social justice movement has sometimes very clear, but I know that the domestic violence, you know, when movements get into their silos, the conversation becomes really just about the individual.
Yes.
And it's really important to make it a global conversation where you do understand historical oppression and colonization and you know, the genocide of certain people and slavery and how all of that impacts violence against women today.
Mm-hmm. And just so that folks listening, you know, really understand how the impact is real, the historical trauma impact, would you share from your perspective of your own experience in life how that historical trauma has affected you or your lives or, you know, your thoughts, your beliefs, etc.?
Well, I think just in my own family, I was talking a lot about, you know, healing from my own story, but I haven't shared my story. And so, you know, I'm originally from the Dominican Republic. I was born in a brothel that my adoptive mother and my biological father owned. Mm-hmm. My mother was a young lady who was a prostitute in this brothel and, you know, had a couple of children. And my adoptive mother took care of the children of the prostitutes in the brothel that she owned. And when I happened to show up in the world, the conversation was, you know, well, I don't want to just take care of her. If you're going to continue this work, I want her for myself. And so the exchange happened. And I pretty much since the day I was born, I've had two parents. Mm. But it wasn't until I came into my own in my late 30s, and I started to realize that I had made these agreements with myself that I had been in domestic violence relationship as a teenager. Mm-hmm. I had a daughter at 15. Mm-hmm. I had been sexually abused by an uncle in my country. And so I was just in this constant cycle of finding myself in very unhealthy relationships with women. that are my partners, and mm-hmm. also as a young child, really vulnerable to sexual abuse and sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And as I look into my story of why that pattern in my life, I clearly, you know, had to look at my mother's story. I had to look at my adopted mother's story, look at all the women in my life, mm-hmm. and look at the historical timing of what was happening in the Dominican Republic with Trujillo being yeah. in dictatorship, and looking at the, you know, the Hermanas Mirabales and the violence against women that was happening, and that the only two options for women at that time was either you were a prostitute in a brothel for, you know, the army, the police, the dictatorship, or you were cleaning homes. Wow. And I kind of got both of the two worlds. So I have a mother who definitely, you know, participated in the prostitution part mm-hmm. As part of her economic situation. And I also have my adoptive mother who has been a domestic worker all her life. Wow. So all of that was very important as I raised my own daughter and tried to not pass down some of the agreements that those two women who raised me and gave birth to me made for themselves.
Hmm. And so for you, you shared that, you know, that the oppression, violence, trauma, historical trauma really showed up in like patterns of violence in your life. But you also mentioned early on diseases and other consequences that those things have on us, on our bodies, on our spirits. Could you expand a little bit on what are the other consequences?
Definitely. I mean, in my own household, my adoptive mother had breast cancer and suffered from asthma for many, many years into mm-hmm. my life. She was also an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And then as I started doing, and as I looked into her life, right, she definitely got married at a very young age, at 15, with this man who was having sex with women, prostitutes in his own brothel, mm-hmm. and having to deal with, you know, whatever emotional, physical violence that was happening in her life at that time, and seeing how that manifested in her life. And as I continued to do this work in the South Bronx, part of the work was creating a space to provide health care mm-hmm. For women of the community, for young and adult women of the community, and to support women in reclaiming their own innate ability to heal and using their cultural and spiritual medicines that they lost on their immigration to the United States as a form of health care. Mm-hmm. And as we did that work for many years, you can definitely start seeing that when women came in with fibroids, if you did, if they could identify the trauma and the violence, even name the person that they were still holding in their womb, and release some of that story, they didn't have to go to the doctor mm-hmm. to get those fibroids removed. Or if they had breast cancer, to really have a deep conversation of like, well, who are you still feeding? You know, who are you still giving your breast to? That you haven't let go of to have kind of your own self-love. And it was, you know, we did that with HIV and AIDS and women who were detoxing from substance abuse and, you know, simple things like arthritis and cholesterol, but definitely all the reproductive diseases that are and mental disease that's happening in our communities really stem from poverty and neglect and the oppression that is happening in our communities and people not having a way to release that from their bodies.
Mm. Thank you so much for making those connections. I think that it's so important that we understand how, you know, diseases that are manifesting in our body are also a result of the environment, of our trauma, of our history.
Yes, that is very important because I think, you know, what's happening with the medical system right now is that they're telling us it's our fault.
Yeah.
Right? And yes, right, we can eat healthier, and yes, we can do a lot of different things. But mm-hmm. primarily, the question becomes, you know, what is happening in our communities, our social, economic, you know, backgrounds? What do we have access to? You know, what is the education that we have? And what has happened to us over time and intergenerationally that is really manifesting in not just our bodies, but as we give birth to future generations that are coming out also with different forms of diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that actually leads me right into my next question, which is, why are healing from those traumas, all sorts of trauma, historical or just of your own life, and really taking care of yourself so important? What are the possibilities really that they offer for our future and for the future of generations to come?
I mean, I think I'm a great example of that. The other day, I now do national and global technical assistance and capacity building, not just on a personal level, but even organizationally. Mm-hmm. And as I go out and do the work and hear the stories, I think the other day I was in a workshop, and for the first time I introduced myself not as a victim and not as a survivor, mm-hmm. but as a complete person. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I'm not a victim, I'm not a survivor, I'm complete. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was that I can now have it all. That my past no longer has a hold in and has a say in what is possible for me to be or to have or to do in this world.
Wow.
Before it was, I can't do that. I am fearful of success and I'm fearful of failure. Or, you know, that's not what my mother taught me. Or, you know, whatever else used to come to my brain. And now it's, you know, if I'm not afraid of what I'm doing tomorrow, then I'm playing a really small game. Mm. And I think the concept is that the world is abundant, and that in its abundance, we can have it all. And there is nothing that we can do. And so I'm no longer exhausted from fixing myself because I'm whole, perfect, and complete. There is nothing to fix about me. I'm not broken. You know, I'm not trying to survive any conversation or any relationship. I'm not trying to hold on to something that no longer belongs to me. But I had so much attachment to people not leaving me that people became property in my life, right? So it was mm-hmm. like, you are mine, and I'm going to hold on to you for the rest of my life, even if this kills me. And so I would imprison myself, and I would imprison that person. And now everything is such a blessing. Mm-hmm. And just like, oh, this person came into my life for this moment, and it is okay. They don't belong to me, right? They belong to the world, and they're out doing their thing, and we're going to be together for as long as we need to, and then we're not. Mm-hmm. And so it's such a different, it's kind of putting on new glasses to see myself and to see the world. And in that, everything is possible. There is nothing that I can't possibly do.
You're making me very happy saying that. I just want to applaud you for...
It just sounds like a cliche. You know, I think a lot of people are saying that about now in the new transformational world and self-help world, right? You can have it all. Everything is a possibility. Yeah. But I think, you know, I know that we can't, that there's money issues and there's this issue. And, you know, we still live in economic crisis and all of that.
Yeah.
But what I'm talking about is an internal state of being.
Yeah.
It is not something outside of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not something outside of you, but it's also, you know, the work that led you there that just is just incredible.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult.
And her sneakers outworn. Rebel woman, yeah. Rebel woman, yeah. She took off her hat and she leaned against a tree. Her rifle by her side, rough worn hands upon her knee. Rebel woman, yeah. Rebel woman. Hinde, 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 hinde
We just finished listening to Chiwanzo Rebel Woman. You are listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Abani, and this evening we are playing an interview with Delphine Crescenzo and Dayanara Marte, healer, organizer, and human rights activist, about her bold rebirth. Before the break, they talked about healing, forgiving, letting go, and finding purpose. In this final part of the interview, Delphine asks Dayanara about her definitions of leadership and how she helps organize organizations and individuals beginning their bold rebirth.
So the possibilities are really endless, and I think that through your work, you really do an amazing job at really defining our leadership as women in different terms than we are used to hearing. I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you define leadership and what, in your opinion, really makes a good leader. How can our leadership capacity really help us address our internal trauma, but also the trauma of, you know, organizations that we work with or that the world that we evolve in?
Sure. I'm going to ask you to just take me through those questions one at a time.
Okay. So let's start by defining leadership for you.
Wow. Leadership is so different from what I used to define it as.
Yes.
Especially being an executive director, and, you know, it was about creating collective structures, having a mission and goals, and making sure that everybody was working towards that, and paying staff, and, you know, running a tight ship. And now, in the concept of leadership, it's more about who I am and how I am leading my life. Mm-hmm. What is it that is still having, I think, a very conscious state of, you know, what is it that I am creating, what still catalyzes me, and how do I show up in the world? How do I communicate to people? How do I keep my word when I say that I'm going to do something? You know, what legacy am I leaving right now today in everybody's life that I touch? Can people count on me? What can they count on me for?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have tools available for myself to be responsible for the impact that I'm having on people, both positive and not so positive? Am I available to listen when someone says to me, you know, what you did not work, right? That is, you know, that was very hurtful. And mm-hmm. do I have the capacity to sit with that and not do anything with it, but definitely make amends if that is what the person is asking me for? And am I continuing on my journey of self-care and self-love, so that when I am in community with people, that is what I am bringing to the table. That is something that they can count on me for. And I think that that is a conversation that is about accountability that is really missing in movements, in organizations. Our structures of personal self-accountability and organizational accountability to who we say we are, to the world that we say we want to create. And when that's not happening and we do show up in trauma and violence and we do show up in internalized oppression, what are the things that we have in place to manage that and to hold ourselves responsible and accountable and make amends and restore some integrity in our work?
Yeah, and so this is, you know, you kind of answered also the second part of the question, which was around, you know, the how, you know, the way that you understand leadership being all about yourself and how you carry yourself in the world and keeping yourself in check as to, you know, the promises that you make, etc. And in so how this really helps us, you know, not just in our dealing with our internal trauma, but also, you know, helping the organizations or, you know, work our workplace in general or our community.
Yes, I think one thing that I want to add that I think is very crucial is, you know, we cannot have both the answers and the questions or the questions and the answers as human beings. And it really takes a collective group of people of your choosing that you give permission to and really share, you know, what you are up to in the world and what do you want to create and have them really hold you to account to manifesting that. And that includes people calling you every day and checking in on you and supporting you when you are in fear, when you feel stuck and paralyzed, when your past does show up, even if you think that you have healed from it, when you still find yourself with all these amazing tools and techniques around self-healing and you're still in an unhealthy relationship with yourself or someone else. Mm-hmm. It's really important to have a community of people around just kind of always poking you and saying, hey, you know, you said you wanted to do this differently. Or, you know, let me give you some reflection or some evaluation of you know, where we think you're at and just hold some level of accountability to the world you said you wanted to create for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely, extremely important for who I am today.
So tell us a little bit about how you help people get on this journey towards a bold rebirth, the same one that you've been through. And so how do you work with organizations, individuals, communities through your consulting firm?
So right now I do a national and global capacity building with nonprofit organizations and women on the front lines leading those organizations and the participants that are in it. And I come in to do workshops and trainings, retreats, where we do get to create a safe space to have some level of self-reflection and heal around trauma, really looking at what happened to us, and then do some work around internalized oppression, which is a story we created about ourselves as a result of what happened to us. And those are two very different things. And so helping people really define that those are two things. And it's when they collapse that it becomes traumatic and it becomes the internalization of oppression or of trauma or of violence. And so I do trainings and workshops and retreats, and I do personal one-on-one coaching with folks, which is always really important. But trauma happens in community, and so healing also needs to happen in community. And so there is a lot of work that I'm really excited about in our movements where people are taking a lot of self-care, doing yoga and Reiki and different individual techniques. And also, it's not until you are back in relationship and in community that you know if those things have really, really worked for what you're up to in the world. And that's the part that I go in and work. which is really, really important. And I also bring in an element of spirituality and reclaiming spaces of culture and its medicine. Because one of my beliefs is that, you know, as women, we have the ability to heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. As people of color, we have the ability to heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. As humanity, we have the ability to heal ourselves. And we are like the earth that sustains us. Yeah. And just like there's war on this earth, humanity also goes through war. And we know that every spring, the earth, no matter what has happened, will regenerate itself. And that is the ability that we have as human beings as well. And so I go in to bring that conversation and to support people to lead from a place, to lead their lives and to lead organizations and movements from a place of power and not just a place of trauma. And really understand the impact that when we show up like that, that has in our leadership, as parents, as partners, as providers, as advocates, as executive directors, as workers on this earth.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious if I can put it in order for you to go to the White House and do a little bit of consulting there.
I'm waiting for the call. I am.
So much
evaluation.
Yeah, so much needs to be done. The way you talk, it's just very empowering to me. I think that very often we compartmentalize things and forget to look at who we are, that we're part of this ecosystem. And that we do have, in fact, this very strong power to heal ourselves. So, thank you.
Yes, and that's what violence does, and I think that's what institutional oppression does, and is really good at is compartmentalizing us and fragmenting us, and that so that we never do feel whole, and we never feel perfect, and we never feel complete, and we're always in search of something outside of ourselves for the answers.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of capitalism.
Yeah.
So, it's wonderful that, psychotherapists, social workers, and all of these beautiful, careers exist. And part of the work is to, is that we aren't broken.
Yeah.
that we are whole, perfect, and complete, and that we have the answers within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are perfect the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us also a little bit about the book, In Bold Rebirth. You're working on it. When is it coming out, and why are you writing this book?
Oh, my God, when is it coming out? That's a good question. Hence, my fear of success and sabotage is all up in this book. This has been a book that I've been writing for a really long time, and it originally was just me compilating my life into a book. I really just wanted to take all my journal pages for the last, 30-something years of my life and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to write a memoir, and I went to this residency program, and I was totally blasted and in a good way. And the folks in my residency, were like, wow, you don't even have the names of your kids or your parents in here. And I was not even aware that I was not using people's names. And I was like, wow, I still have a lot of work to do around my own story that I am not even putting people's names. And to continue to write that memoir would have required me to really go back to my country and, remember things in a way that I don't think that I was ready to remember. The smells, the scents, so that I can take the reader through a journey with me. And I really was just, as the way that I speak is exactly the way that I write, which is like, this is what happened to me. I got raped. Let's keep it moving. And so I didn't want to do all of that. And so what happens now is that I am doing instead, still using my story, but one of the practices that was very helpful that I've used for the past 15 years of my life is this. Balancing of the seasons to understand and unfold my whole entire life and to understand the patterns that I have to be in balance with the season. And so a collective group of us, I think since about 2005, went through a training collectively for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And our mentor shared this beautiful practice of every season we would sit down and we would get intensively trained on what the gift, the medicine, the modality, the energy center, just everything that was available that season brought to our life. And I talked about how as human beings, we have the ability to heal like the earth that sustains us. Mm-hmm. Well, just like the seasons, we also have the ability to heal with every season. And every spring, we give birth to ourselves, and every winter, we die. And it is not the death like, you know, we're going underground, but it definitely is the death of going back within the womb mm-hmm. and dreaming in the dark our rebirth for the spring. And so for 2 years, we went on a journey, and it's that journey that I am writing about in this book to support women on the front lines and leaders get in balance with the season and use the season as a way to heal trauma. Mm-hmm.
Well, I really look forward to the book and to reading it.
Yes, it's going to be really good.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dee, for, you know, really enlightening us. I'd love for you to share with people who might be interested in contacting you. What's the best way for them to find out more about your work or to get in contact with you?
Yes, you can contact me at emboldrebirth@gmail.com. I do have a webpage at www.emboldrebirth.wordpress.com. Mm-hmm.
And I'll definitely link to it on the KBOO website. Thank you so much, Dee. This has been just a wonderful time with you.
Thank you so much, Delphine, for having me. And it's a summer solstice, so wishing everybody some creative juices and some ignition, some fire to manifest your dreams.
That's awesome.
We just finished listening to a deep conversation that Delphine Crescenzo had with Dayanara Marte, healer, organizer, and human rights activist, about her concept In Bold Rebirth. To read Dayanara Marte's work, you can go to www.inboldrebirth.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening to Bread and Roses tonight. I'm Leanne Kranz, and with me in the studio is brand new Bread and Roses member Abani. I want to thank her for her bravery on the mic tonight. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists, bringing you feminist news and public affairs every Friday night at 6 p.m. We are always open to new members, and no experience is necessary. If you'd like to host, produce, or engineer with us, please contact Ani Haynes, KBOO's volunteer manager, at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, share comments or show ideas, and you can like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses. Have a good week, everybody.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Good in the Hood. multicultural music and food festival held in North and Northeast Portland, June 27th, 28th, and 29th. The festival features a variety of cultural food vendors, an information village, a kids' space area, and an ethnic marketplace, as well as a parade and live entertainment provided by Gino Michaels and Soul City, Sonny Hess, Kimberly Monique, the 503 Steppers, Sistas for Life, and more. Again, that's Good in the Hood, June 27th, 28th, and 29th at Lillis Albina Park, North Russell Street at Flint Avenue. More information about Good in the Hood can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey everybody, elections are coming up for the KBOO Board of Directors. Right now we're looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate